Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to From the Sidelines. I'm here with Josh, and I'm Devin, and we're going to be doing some Oscars preview for you guys. Got a little 2024 Oscars preview going on. We're going to talk some movies, give you our picks, and talk about what we think is going to take down these races in a week or so. So feel free to grab a bucket of popcorn and get comfy in your recliner, because it's going to be all movie talk from us. And while you're at it, you might as well pull out your phone and go to Twitter or Instagram or any other social media and drop us a follow at FTSPod, or go sub on YouTube. You can find us at From the Sidelines Pod. And if you have any questions or comments or want to give your thoughts on any of these Oscar races or what you think should win, if you think, Lily Gladstone should take Best Actress, you know, just let us know. Feel free to send us an email to theftspod@gmail.com. So, Josh, you want to get started here?
Yeah.
What do you think? Let's follow the Oscar format. You know, let's follow the format of the Oscars. Let's go Best Supporting Actress first category. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on this one. You know, I think this one's pretty well in hand. Not a big competition here. I think Divine Joy Randolph is just going to win. She's won at all the precursors, the SAG. You know, you name it, she's won this award. So she'll be winning. And yeah, I think that's who I vote for as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's in her name, Joy. I mean, she was a joy to watch on the screen. It was great. I mean, the chemistry she had with the rest of the cast and the holdovers was great. I mean, her and Paul Giamatti just dominated. And, I mean, I don't know, every scene she was in, she just took over. It was obvious that she was meant for that role, and I think there's no question she should win. I mean, I think there's some people out there that, you know, may think that Emily Blunt might win, but that's just because of the Oppenheimer hype. But no, yeah, I completely agree. I've got Divine Joy Randolph in the Best Supporting Actress as well, so there's not much to say at all.
Yeah, I mean, as long as America Ferrera doesn't win, who cares, right? That's really all that matters.
That was definitely the most shocking of the Best Supporting Actress nominations by far.
Yeah, it was a terrible, not a good performance. But I mean, it was just polar opposites from Joy Randolph. So thankfully, the best one's gonna win.
Exactly. Not much to say. Wanna go on to the next one?
Yeah, let's go to Best Supporting Actor. This one a little more contentious. You know, I think the winner's pretty much well in hand, but there's some controversy over the nominations. But Robert Downey Jr. gonna take this award down. I don't think there's any question about that. Fantastic performance in Oppenheimer. And William Dafoe left out. Personally, I think Charles Melton in May December was fantastic. Probably my favorite part of that movie. I wish he would have gotten a nom, or even Dominic Sessa from The Holdovers. I loved his performance as well. But yeah, I'd give it to Robert Downey Jr. and it looks like they're going to.
Yeah. I've got RDJ too. You know, I could see the Academy going with Ryan Gosling as well. I think it would be a mistake, but I could see them going that direction. I think he's already won some awards. The odd man out here, I think, is Sterling K. Brown. I didn't think his performance in American Fiction was good at all. I mean, I thought, you know, it was completely adequate, completely fine, not Oscars worthy. Like you said, I think Dominic Sessa could have easily replaced him, or Willem Dafoe. You know, it didn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. He just wasn't on the screen very much, and I don't know. Like, I don't feel like it was that crucial of a role. I mean, I don't know. Just Charles Melton is just a focal point of the movie, and has to be good to make the movie work. Just not for me. Not a performance for me. It was fine. I don't think it was definitely top five.
Yeah, I've got RDJ winning. I think there's some good performances though. I think, you know, Robert De Niro, great in everything that he does. I mean, he's a mastermind at what he does. So you see him and he's on the screen, he is making an impact for sure. And then Mark Ruffalo, I mean, sneaky good pick. I thought he made Poor Things. You know, obviously, you know, Emma Stone was phenomenal, but every scene that Mark Ruffalo was in had me dying. I thought the dude was hilarious. And then he had some moments where, you know, he scared to be pissed off and he had to deliver that anger, and he did really well. I mean, as somebody who's used to seeing him in Marvel and being wasted as a character, and you know, it's good to see him in a role like that. But obviously RDJ, Strauss, and Oppenheimer was just phenomenal. I mean, it was unbelievable. I don't have anything else to say.
So good, you gotta watch it twice, right?
I gotta watch it twice. Yes, yes sir, yes sir, man. Yes, actually sir. Yeah, we're about to go see it again, so I'm
yes, sir. All right. We'll switch gears from the acting categories. Kind of some blowouts there. Go to a more contested race, a little two-horse race for you, Josh. We got the best animated feature. One of my favorite categories each year. I gotta say, I love the animated features. You just get some nice surprises. You know, nice surprises. Maybe a little bit of a stretch with Robot Dreams, but I'm a big fan of Nimona. If you listen to maybe a little 2020s decade movie draft, you'll hear how big a fan I am of Nimona. But I think it will win, but I'm hoping Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse takes this category down. I haven't seen The Boy and the Heron. I mean, I watched Spirited Away. Regret that decision. So if Boy and the Heron's anything like Spirited Away, it is not for me. I'm just going to take my favorite movie of the year and take Across the Spider-Verse. I think it'll win.
Yeah, I mean, eventually we've got to disagree, but I think just everything's been so straightforward so far. I mean, there's a clear-cut winner for every category, and there's no exceptions here. It's Across the Spider-Verse. I mean, you know, I don't know a ton about animation and like all the technicalities of it, but I mean, I know when a movie looks good, and that movie is just amazing. I mean, and the first one too, like the style of animation is just unlike anything that we've seen before. Obviously, you know, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie came out this year. Didn't get nominated, but it's got a similar animation style. So there are movies that are starting to pick up on that and kind of use that style. But I mean, you know, Across the Spider-Verse, Into the Spider-Verse paved the way, looks amazing. And then it's just a 5-star movie. I mean, it's just exhilarating. It's a race the entire way. There's no point in that movie where you feel any sort of boredom or dullness or just feel like it's slowing down at all. It just keeps going and going and going. Phenomenal movie. Absolutely should win this award.
Yep, I'm a little bit worried about The Boy and the Heron, but I think Across the Spider-Verse will win. You know, I think it won the won the Eddies tonight? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I won the Eddies. So, I mean, maybe that's pretty good precursors. So.
Yeah, I will say what shouldn't win, and that's Elemental. I mean,
I haven't seen that one.
Talk about just the most lazy Pixar movie there is. I don't know what it is with Pixar, but just every single movie that they have been coming out with lately, aside from a couple, like, you know, Soul was great, but aside from a couple movies, it's just been so lazy. And it's the same thing for Elemental. Like, you know, the plot is predictable, and it's just not fun. Also, I had the worst theater experience of my life. Took the girl. We went and had a little nice date. Went and saw Elemental. Just theater packed full of children. If it's going to be on Disney Plus, wait for it to come on Disney Plus. Do not, for the life of you, go see any sort of animated Disney movie in theaters, because it's a living hell pretty much. But you know, that's my Elemental rant. Obviously, Team Spider-Verse.
Until you're a big fan.
Oh yeah.
All right, we won't touch on every category, Josh, but we'll touch on the ones, you know, I feel like we have pretty good pulse on, pretty good opinion. We'll go to the best live action short here. I think this one's pretty much well wrapped up. I think The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar will win this award. You know, Wes Anderson short, fantastic. It's just pure Wes Anderson doing his thing for 40 minutes. It's the style you'd expect, and I don't think any of the other shorts really came close. I mean, I kind of like Night of Fortune, and Red, White, and Blue had a nice twist, but you know, they were definitely nothing like the experience of Henry Sugar. So that's my pick as well, and I'm excited to see it win.
Yeah, no, I agree. Wes Anderson, I mean, it was the best Wes Anderson project of the year. Asteroid City, you were completely mid. But, you know, Henry Sugar, I thought was really intriguing. I thought it was a great, great short film. Benedict Cumberbatch, I mean, was meant to be in a Wes Anderson film. So I would love to see them get together again in the future and do a full-length film. You know, I did like Night of Fortune. That was probably my second favorite of the live action nominations. I don't know. I think it deserves some credit as well. I thought it was a nice little story. Obviously, it was very heartbreaking. I mean, it's just, you know, if you've ever been through that sort of situation with death, you know, and just dealing with that, processing that, you know, that's a good one to watch. It's not very long. Obviously, none of these are very long. Henry Sugar being the longest one, about 40 minutes, but I think that deserves some credit too. You know, all these are pretty decent short films. I enjoyed just about every single one of them, but I think Henry Sugar definitely takes the cake for me.
Yeah, I think they're all like solid, but I think Henry Sugar was definitely the special one out of that group. And then if you turn your attention to the best animated short, I think Letter to a Pig is supposed to win. I think that's the projected favorite. It couldn't be me. Could not be me. I mean, I had to sit through that in our uniform. Just abysmal shorts. Just the most painful experience. Like the first half of Letter to a Pig was like okay, like pretty good. But I don't know what happened in the second half. If you've seen it, you know, like it just completely lost all sense of direction for me. You went to Pluto in that short. So it was not for me. I definitely would be voting for 95 Senses here. Probably my favorite short, I think. Even better than Henry Sugar. That one blew me away. I go into these shorts. I don't know anything about them, right? I just sit there and I just want to have a good time for 10, 15 minutes. And so I didn't really understand the premise when I started watching it. And I just thought, you know, it's a cool animation, cool narration. But Tim Blake Nelson narrating it was awesome. And once like I realized what was happening in the short, I was like, wow, that one hit. So that was my favorite.
No, I mean, yeah. Yet another one we agree on. I was also big on 95 Senses. I mean, just the absolute curveball you get is insane. Like, you think it's just this nice, sweet story. Then, all of a sudden, he is on the verge of death. Like, he is in jail. He is about to be killed for heinous crimes. So, it's just a whirlwind of emotion. Like, I remember texting
spoiler Devin, alert if you haven't seen it.
Spoiler alert, yeah. I remember texting Devin after watching it, just sent him multiple emojis in a row. It was probably like 20 different emojis, just different emotions that I felt as I was watching this short film, keep in mind. So definitely give it a watch. I mean, you feel everything possible, but that would be my pick as well. But Letter to a Pig will probably win. I don't know. The animated shorts definitely weren't as good as the live action shorts, in my opinion, minus 95 Senses. I mean, War is Over was just cringy, kind of.
The weirdest song choice of the year, of the decade. I kind of enjoyed it, like a little bit, like up until that point. But I was just like, what is happening? Why are we playing Christmas music? So I mean, yeah, like I thought it was cool animation, but it just ruined it at the end.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely cool animation, cool story. I mean, but the song, God, that just you can't take it seriously when that song kicks in. You can't take it seriously anymore. So
no, you cannot.
Yeah.
No, so I mean, I think like, you know, I would watch 95 Senses and I'd watch Henry Sugar and call it a day with these. So we'll move on to some of the bigger categories, some of the races people came to hear about. You know, let's start with Best Actress. Two Horse Race, pretty much. You know, we got Emma Stone in Poor Things, I think, and Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon. Those are the two favorites. I think it's pretty much a coin flip at this point. I don't have a strong lean for the prediction either way. Neither result would shock me. I personally prefer Lily Gladstone's performance, so that she would get my vote. But I don't know what to expect. This Oscar, who's going to win this Oscar between those two? Do you have any insight, Josh? What do you think?
No, I mean, I think Lily Gladstone is favored slightly. Personally, I would go Emma Stone though. I mean, you know, that Poor Things is just such a strange movie. I mean, there are obviously a lot of moments where, you know, she'll make you feel uncomfortable. She'll make you laugh. She'll make you, you know, wonder if she's all right, you know. But just the portrayal she has in that movie is insane. The way she's able to make you feel all of those different emotions is insane. I feel like Lily Gladstone's performance was also amazing. You know, she had some powerful moments. But I also feel like she kind of had just some, you know, normal, simple, basic acting moments for the most part. I don't know. I feel like just Poor Things the whole time, Emma Stone was just showing off what she is capable of, and that's who I would go with personally. No pun intended. If you've seen the movie, no pun intended.
I'll just leave that one right there. You know, if you want to talk about any of the other nominees? I mean, I thought Sandra Hüller was really good in Anatomy of a Fall, and then Carey Mulligan was all right. Probably the best part of Maestro for me. I watched Naiad because of these two nominations. Jodie Foster deserved. Annette Bening. The only thing I can figure out is that they were like, there's something I don't understand about the physical demand that was required to play that role. Because, you know, she's doing the swimming challenge. But, I mean, she's just swimming for 85% of her screen time. like that's the only acting she's doing. So, like, it just has to be, like a credit to, like, the difficulty of having to do the swimming. Maybe that's all I can figure. She was barely on the screen outside of the water. And when she was nothing special. She couldn't hold a candle to Jodie Foster in those scenes, so that was the weirdest nomination to me. Where's Margot Robbie? I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I haven't seen that yet, but by the sounds of it, I don't know that I
You're
want to.
You're not missing anything.
Yeah, not missing much there. Sandra Hüller, obviously, I mean, was great in Anatomy of a Fall. I think I would give her the third place spot in this race. And then, you know, Carey Mulligan, you know, I mean, she was great in Maestro, definitely the best part of that movie. We'll get to our opinions on that movie here later, but, it's a good race. You know, the only thing I question, like you said, is Annette Bening. You know, there might be other actresses that deserve the spot a little bit more, but it's a two-way race. Got to give your props to Hüller and Mulligan. They both put on great performances as well, but, you know, just Gladstone and Stone are on another level.
Yep, I tend to agree there. So we'll move on to the Best Lead Actor category. I think this one's pretty much wrapped up. I mean, all the precursors have gone to Cillian Murphy, so I think he'll win. But my vote would be Paul Giamatti here. I know Josh might disagree with me on that one, but man, I thought that was the best performance of the year. I mean him and Dominic Cessa, those scenes with those two, they just carried it. And, you know, you just get so engrossed in their relationship and him being the teacher and, like, his backstory. And I just feel like you're so more invested in, like, the character itself, which I think is probably, like, the main thing I look for in an actor in a performance. And I think he did that better than, I mean, Cillian Murphy, great, obviously. You know, it's nothing against him, but I just thought Paul Giamatti's performance was just better.
I disagree. I mean, I gotta go Cillian. I mean, I don't know. Just nothing against Giamatti. I think he's definitely my second, and maybe even a close second. And it's kind of hard to judge the two because the movies are so different. You know, one's a very heartfelt story, you know, and then one's a very it's got a serious tone. You know, Oppenheimer is a pretty serious movie. I still lean Cillian Murphy. There's just so many scenes in Oppenheimer. Like, specifically after the bombing, like, when he is in the stadium, or in the gymnasium, people stomping their feet, and he's giving his speech. That was just one of the most chilling scenes I've seen, and I don't know, I felt that way so many times while watching Oppenheimer. And then, you know, with Giamatti, you know, it's just, it's hard not to like his character. He is such a likable character, he portrays it very well. The chemistry between him and Cessa is amazing. I mean, it's just a feeling thing for me. You know, I liked, you know, Cillian Murphy a little bit more. It's close, though. I mean, I love them both. I love them both. They're definitely top two for me.
All right. I mean, I think I agree. I think they were clearly the two best performances of the year. So, no issue either way for me. But I just favor the underdog in this race, you know?
Yep, can't hate that. Let's talk about a couple of the other guys in this race. You know, let's go with Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. How did you feel about his performance?
It was good. I think it was better than Sterling K. Brown's, in my opinion. I thought it was good. I don't know. I just don't think it was a strong year in this category. I didn't really love any of these other three. I mean, I haven't seen Rustin, so I can't speak on Coleman Domingo, but. Yeah, they just weren't as special as the other two, so I think the gap is just so large that I just, you know, kind of didn't appreciate them maybe as much as they deserve, him and Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I actually do, even though I don't love the movie, I do think Bradley Cooper would be my third choice for this. It's a slow movie, but some of the scenes, the way he acts, you would never expect Bradley Cooper to be able to pull off that kind of role. I mean, the dude plays Rocket Raccoon. Like, it's not something you'd ever expect from him, so I think that was outside of his comfort zone. I thought he did it pretty well, even though I didn't love the movie. Jeffrey Wright, thought he also had a pretty decent performance. I just didn't think the movie itself was that great, and I don't think, you know, in the script they gave him enough moments to really show off his, you know, ability. Yeah, and then I haven't seen Rustin, so I can't say much about Coleman Domingo. But, yeah, I mean, the Bradley Cooper and Jeffrey Wright, I think, deserve to be there. That fifth spot, I don't know. Like I said, I haven't seen Rustin. Do you think there's anybody else that may have been snubbed from this this category?
Yeah, I definitely think Leo should have gotten a nom for Killers of the Flower Moon here. But I was stunned to see he got snubbed. I mean, I guess Coleman Domingo was just that good. Maybe. And then I mean, you know, I already know what Josh is going to say. Josh is going to say, where's Zac Efron? where's the left Ryan Claw? Iron Claw getting shut out. I mean, come on. I know it came out late, but Zac Efron, fantastic performance. So, yeah, I would have probably put those two guys on my ballot personally if I was submitting a nomination ballot.
Yeah, no, you nailed it on the head. I mean, I think Leo is definitely shocking. I mean, you see that Scorsese is coming out with a movie, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's obviously going to get awards at the Academy. And then you see it's a Scorsese Leo movie, and then you're like, yeah, that's got to be minus 1,000. But nope, no, he wasn't on it. And I would have put him above Jeffrey Wright and Bradley Cooper, too, personally. Don't even get me started on Zac Efron and Iron Claw. I mean, there are multiple people that could have been nominated for multiple roles, could have gotten a Best Picture nomination, if you ask me. It's just unfortunate timing. You know, there's movies that come out in December all the time that get snubbed from the Oscars. I don't know what their plan was. I don't really think they were going for the Oscars, obviously, but, you know, I kind of feel bad for Zac Efron. You know, that was his, that if he ever had a chance, it was that movie, and he's not going to get it, so that kind of sucks. But yeah, I mean, Best Actor.
Yep. So we got two left. Again, pretty much already decided. We got Best Director up next. I mean, this will be Christopher Nolan, no doubt about it. He's won all the precursors. So, you know, go ahead and put that one on your trophy shelf, Nolan. But, you know, I thought some of the nominations were interesting. Surprised that we had two international directors get nominated in Justine Triet and Jonathan Glazer. Any thoughts on anything outside of Nolan? I know you'd vote Nolan, I'd vote Nolan, everyone would vote Nolan, but
yeah.
Any thoughts on who should have gotten those other spots?
Yeah, I know a lot of people love Zone of Interest. I personally didn't. I do think there are some really, really good shots in that movie, though. I mean, just there are some scenes where it pans over the family, and then you just see smoke and, like, tiny explosions going on in the background, different things, and then just knowing what that actually is just is chilling to me. Unfortunately, like, for the movie, they didn't show any scenes involving, you know, that kind of thing going on, which I wish it would have. I think it would have made the movie better. I think that's where it lacked. You know, it didn't actually, you know, dive into the, you know, that kind of situation. But, and then Anatomy of a Fall, I thought it was a good movie, but as far from a director's standpoint, I don't really know if there was, you know, I don't know. I think Trier is probably the weakest of the bunch, in my opinion, for this this nomination.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think there were any, like, special stuff outside of the one scene in Anatomy of a Fall that, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, that was, like, well done and, like, kept control of the movie. And I just, I think, like, the ending wasn't really good. I would have preferred, like, an ambiguous ending, probably, rather than, like, getting, like, the court's decision. I don't know, just some things I would have done differently in that movie. I definitely would have preferred to see, like, Celine Song for Past Lives. I thought that, you know, I didn't love that movie, but I thought the directing in that movie was fantastic. Especially the, like, once they came over to America and they met up in person, I thought all of those scenes were really well shot. I mean, I thought the opening and ending scenes were just fantastic work. And it really, you know, I really think the final scene was like, man, this is something special. So I would have liked to have seen her get recognized in her directorial debut.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I completely agree with that. I thought, especially like you said, the opening and ending scenes were amazing. I know you're a big opening and ending scene guy there. She deserved it. Yeah, that would have been great to see her get that nomination. Unfortunately, she didn't. There's just a lot of great things going on in that movie. But, I mean.
Yep, her and Greta Lee left out. So sad.
Yeah, that's also shocking, you know, Greta Lee. But, you know, it's Nolan. It's Nolan. I mean, there's no question about it.
Yep. No Alexander Payne either. No love for the Holders. Come on, guys. What are we doing?
I don't know.
But anyway, we'll move on to the final award, the biggest award of the night. We already know who it's going to. Best Picture. This will be Oppenheimer for sure. No question in my mind. But Josh and I'll go through. We'll start 10-1, and we'll go through and give you our power rankings of the 10 nominated Best Picture movies. And, you know, surprisingly, if you've listened to the rest of this podcast, you'd be surprised. We have a lot of opinions in common here. So we'll start at the bottom. Number 10, Maestro for me.
I got Maestro. I mean, you know, I touched on it just a hair earlier. Now we can talk about it just a little bit more. But it's just that movie just it doesn't grab your attention much at all, aside from a couple of scenes. You know, like, it's not a long movie, but it felt way longer than it was. I don't know how to describe it. Just kind of boring. Kind of boring, in a sense. You know, I mean, some cool music, some cool scenes. I just didn't care for the character. I didn't care for much at all. I thought the script was just boring. Like, he would just be talking, and I just didn't really know or care what he was talking about, so.
Yeah, it was not interesting at all. Try to stay awake and one watch of Maestro Challenge, Impossible Edition. The longest 130-minute movie ever. Nothing really positive to say about it. What worst movie I watched of the year? It's 10 of 10, no doubt. I mean, it's probably 100 out of 100. Like, it doesn't get much worse than Maestro.
Yep.
All right, I think we have the same number 9. I got Zone of Interest. Yep. Did not like the movie. Somehow not last. Thank you, Maestro. Shout out Bradley Cooper. Saw this in theater. The sound is the one good thing I can say. I think if it won Best Sound, I think that would be well deserved. That's easily the best part of the movie, but it didn't do anything for me. The black screens, I'm just sitting there. That not effective. The like implication of it all. It's like, okay, great. Like, I know what happens. It's history. It's not like I have to fill in some big aha or like gaps in my mind. Like, just it just doesn't work for me. So it's boring. Not a lot of dialogue. Not a lot of interesting scenes. I watch a guy turn off lights for 5 minutes. Like, what are we doing here? So yeah, no. But somehow not last.
Somehow not last. I agree. I also have Zone of Interest at 9. I liked it a little bit more than Devin. I gave it 3 out of 5. I thought there were definitely some cool stuff going on. I thought it was extremely chilling, extremely unsettling. It's just kind of one of those movies you've got to feel. You know, you've got to really just try to connect as much as possible. And then if you do that, then, you know, obviously you're going to pick up a little bit more on it. You're going to, you know, have a better understanding of it. But, you know, also that's not really, you know, that's not necessarily what makes a movie. You should be able to watch a movie and just enjoy it for what it is. Shouldn't have to put forth much extra work in order to, you know, enjoy it or understand it or anything. So I also understand that as well. The sound was great, as you said. That is the one thing that's above and beyond for this movie. And yeah, no, I mean, it definitely had its slow moments. So It's not a 5-star movie by any means for me. It's a 3-star movie. I know a lot of people have this, you know, up there with Oppenheimer. I know some people would say, you know, it's probably second. Not for us. Unfortunately, just couldn't get behind the slow pace of it. And yeah, I don't know. Just a not a ton, except for the sound.
Yeah, no, I mean, just didn't work. I know some friends who liked it, just not me. All right, moving on up. Number 8, I have Barbie in this slot, Josh.
I got Barbie, yes, sir.
All right, we're 3 for 3 on matching. You know, I thought it was all right. I saw it twice, got worse on the second watch. It's pretty funny. I think Ryan Gosling's really funny. I like the music. You know, it got two best original song nominations, and the best song in the movie didn't even get nominated. Dance the Night by Dua Lipa didn't even get a nomination. It's the best. It's the best of the three. Well, the Academy Awards, they're gonna do their thing, but I thought, you know, they had some good jokes. Ryan Gosling's pretty funny. Margot Robbie was great. You know, I just didn't love like the plot. Felt a little senseless, and Will Ferrell and American Ferrera did not work for me either in either capacity. So, yeah, just some things I didn't. And I thought the ending was like pretty terrible. Maybe it hits if you're like a mom or daughter. I don't know. I just like the montage with the Billie Eilish song. I'm like, okay. I don't know. What are your thoughts? You got any thoughts?
I mean, you know, I know what people are going to say. Obviously, the movie, it was not made for, you know, people like me and Devin. Men, stand up. But, I mean, it was a good movie. You know, I thought Margot Robbie was great. I thought Ryan Gosling was great. I thought, you know, if you think of Barbie and who can play that role, one of the people I would have thought of is Margot Robbie. So I thought they nailed the casting for that. Sleeper pick. I thought maybe even, like, Anya Taylor-Joy. When I heard, like, the movie was announced, I thought she would have been a good Barbie. But no, like, Ryan Gosling was hilarious. There were some really, really cool moments in this movie. I thought everything that was inside of Barbie world was great, and then everything that happened in the real world just didn't do it for me. I thought if the whole movie was set in Barbie land and they kept that going, I thought it would have been much better. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. And there were just some points where it fell flat, kind of a cringy ending as well. Didn't love Will Ferrell that much. Yeah, I don't know. Not much to say, but Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling carried it.
Yep, I am rooting for it in best costume. I thought it had a ton of great costumes. So.
Oh, yeah.
I am hoping it takes that one down. All right, moving on up to number 7. I have American Fiction.
I also have American Fiction. We've got a theme going here.
There we go. I promise we didn't coordinate this in advance. Again, I thought the satire was pretty good. I just, you know, didn't love the movie. Didn't really, you know, I thought it was like just a good movie. Like, I can't really say anything bad about it, but didn't have anything really special for me. And then, like, I don't think the ending. Again, I just common theme here. Don't think these endings aren't very good. It was like the thing with the multiple endings. It's like, oh, psych, press the rewind button. Not that. Let's do this instead. Yeah. I'm like, what am I watching? Like, this kind of ruined it. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, like, the emotion. Like, I don't think it was, like, very emotional. Again, like, the satire is just the best part. And that part worked. The rest, not that good.
Yeah. I agree with you. The satire was good. I also just thought it was an okay movie. Nothing really blew me away, though. I thought the score was pretty cool. I thought it had some neat music going on in the background at times. And then I do disagree a little bit with the ending. I kind of enjoyed the ending. You know, I mean, some people would say it's cliche. But I think, you know, seeing the multiple perspectives of what could have happened was kind of neat to see. And then obviously it left a little bit up for interpretation, too. You know, that ending for the majority probably would not have satisfied a lot of people, but I thought it was kind of a breath of fresh air personally. You know, Jeffrey Wright was great. Sterling K. Brown, overrated, but it was a good movie. It was a fun watch. There's nothing super negative you can say about it, but there's also nothing super positive you can say about it. So.
Yeah, I pretty much tend to agree. I definitely pretty much share the same thoughts outside of the depending on the ending. So we'll move on up to number six. Starting to get to some movies I enjoyed a little bit more. At number six, I have Poor Things. Finally, we have a disagreement, I think, here, right?
Yep, I've got Anatomy of a Fall.
All right. We'll talk about Poor Things first. I think Yorgos Lanthimos just I knew this is my first Yorgos movie. I knew he wasn't going to be the director for me. I'd heard he was really weird, and this movie was pretty weird. So I was already a little like, I'm not gonna be. This is not gonna be for me. And sure enough, I was not disappointed. It was very weird, kind of unsettling at some points. Emma Stone was great. Margot Robbie was great. Good performances. I know a lot of people say it looks great and like the production's really good. I'm gonna take a hot take and say I didn't love it. I thought it was kind of like way over the top, like way too extra. So I was like, we're just trying way too hard, and it just doesn't really work for me. But I thought some of the scenes were really good with Mark Ruffalo and Emma Stone in particular. That really helped. Helps. And then I thought the end portion when the old ex-husband comes back. Spoiler alert, but I thought that was good too. So, yeah, I thought it had its ups and downs. So, pretty mediocre, I think, overall.
Yep. For me, I had Anatomy of a Fall. I enjoyed the movie a lot. I thought, Sandra Hüller was great. The beginning of the movie, kind of the first half, just wasn't doing much for me. And then you got to the trials, and that was where the movie just kind of started to take off and, get me excited, kind of blew me away a little bit. I will say this movie made me pretty much hate 50 Cent. If you watch this movie, you'll know why, because you'll just hear the most obnoxious thing over and over and over again. So if you watch that movie, give us a tweet or something. Let us know what you thought about 50 Cent. Annoying as hell. But yeah, that kind of drove me crazy. And then there's obviously one scene in specific between Sandra Hüller's character and her husband in the movie, and it just steals the whole movie. I mean, it's just probably one of the best scenes I've seen in any of the 2023 Oscar noms. And yeah, I mean, it was so powerful. I thought, that's one of probably the biggest reason I gave it a 3.5 out of 5, but probably the biggest reason I scored it that was because of that scene and Hüller's performance. So yeah, nothing much to say except that I didn't love the first half of the movie, and I can't stand 50 Cent anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I like you were saying about that scene, I was watching the movie just in, just thought it was pretty good, and then I saw that scene and I was like, oh, this is why it's next level. That was probably one of my favorite scenes of the year. So definitely encourage watching. I would watch that movie just to see that scene. Like, that's how good yeah. I think that in particular was. So I think up next you have Poor Things. You want to touch on that? Let's see. You heard what I said. What do you think? What do you think? Why do you think it's fifth?
Yeah, it was also my first Yorgos movie, and he's not for everyone. But I enjoyed it a lot. I thought, Emma Stone, like I said earlier in the podcast, that I thought she was probably my pick for, best actress. And then Mark Ruffalo, also, I mentioned he's a sneaky good pick for supporting actor. I thought their chemistry was great together. I thought Willem Dafoe was also great. I mean, just that role was made for him. I mean, just this creepy scientist making animal human hybrids and just putting brains in things that should not have brains. I don't know. He's just that maniacal, evilish, but cynical kind of guy. And I think Willem Dafoe is obviously the perfect person for that. He played Green Goblin. He's done that kind of thing before. If you've seen Lighthouse, I mean, kind of a similar kind of vibe, I think. Yeah, I just thought the style was unique. Obviously, there were some moments where I was a little unsettling, a little uneasy. Saw some parts that you don't want to see a little too close up. But, all the cruise ship stuff with Mark Ruffalo and Emma Stone is maybe my favorite stuff in the movie just because it was so funny. Their chemistry was great. It looked awesome, I thought. And Yeah, I mean, it was a good movie. I know you don't agree with the look, but, you know, like they go outside and you just see the sky. I thought it was unique. I thought it was unique. It was obviously edited up a bit, but I thought it was cool to see.
Okay, I mean, you know, it's you liked it a little bit more than me, but we pretty much agree here. My number five is your number four, so we'll talk about this one. Killers of the Flower Moon. It's, you know, good luck trying to watch it in one sitting. Some of us are able to do that. Pat myself on the back for that one. But, you know, if you want to take a week like Chad probably will take to watch this one, I don't blame you at all. Over, like, 3.5 hours. So basically my analysis boils down to, you got two things you can do as a filmmaker. You can make it really good and really long, or you can make it, like, not as good but not really long. But you can't pick one or the other. So if it's gonna be, I thought it was like pretty good, but the fact that it's so long, it just detracted from the movie for me. So I wish it was like, you know, 2.5 hour max, and then I probably would have liked it a bit more. But man, it just kept dragging on, and I thought there was a lot of stuff. Like, it could have been a lot shorter. Yeah. Like, it didn't need to be that long. There was a lot of scenes that I just. And it took a little bit to get going, like, a little bit unnecessarily. Like, if you're trying to condense this, you definitely could have. So, I mean, Martin Scorsese, make a movie under 3 hour challenge, impossible. But outside of the length, I can't really complain about anything in particular. I thought it was just a good, solid movie, enjoyable movie. Nothing spectacular, but overall pretty solid. And like I said, Lily Gladstone was great, so... Any other thoughts, Josh, to add here? Is your fourth ranked movie?
Yeah, lots to say about Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, obviously, you touched on it a bit there. Martin Scorsese make a movie under 3 hours challenge. Impossible. There's just moments in this movie where, you know, it's hard to keep up with just because it is so long. It feels like it kind of drags and drags and drags for a little bit. But then there's some big moments, you know. Obviously, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's some cool things that happen. I thought De Niro's character was great. I thought Leo's character was great. I thought Gladstone's character was great. So you got three people, you know, leading the way right there that were just phenomenal. So from an acting standpoint, great. Also, the set design, some of the shots in the movie were so cool. I mean, it was just really nice to see, like, that era, you know, that Western kind of feel, obviously. And then, yeah, I mean, it blew me away at points. The only thing I can say negative about it is that it dragged a little bit because of the length. But other than that, I can't say anything bad about it.
What'd you think about the, like, spoiler alert if you haven't watched it, but what'd you think about the thing at the end where it was like, you like go, like, you're like present time, and then you realize it's like people reenacting it as like a play in a theater? I don't really understand what the point of that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was kind of like scratching my head, like, okay, why is this a thing we need to put in the movie? I don't know. Is there any insight there or anything? Did you like that at all? I didn't like it, but
I liked it. I didn't like the way they did it. I thought if they would have kept that going at certain spots throughout the movie, then it would have made it a little bit better. Like, you know, in those moments, some of those moments where it feels like it's dragging, maybe throw like a clip in there of, you know, that guy narrating it and kind of, you know, kind of have a change of pace a little bit, I think would have been nice. But just throwing it in at the end, I thought was kind of lame. It would have made way more sense to have it in the movie a little bit more and kind of have it going throughout. But I didn't love it. Just, I like the idea. Just they didn't do it the right way.
Okay. All right, my number four we touched on already, but Anatomy of a Fall, best scene of 2023, and, you know, Sandra Hüller, two great performances this year, so we won't revisit that one, but we'll go to number three, and I have Past Lives number three.
Past Lives, yes, sir, I do, too.
Past Lives number three, all right, shocker, we got to get into this top three here. Greta Lee was awesome in this movie. Great performance. Probably would have been on my ballot top five best actress performance this year. And then Celine Song, directorial debut, fantastic. I don't think it was as much of a gut punch for me as I think it is for most. I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe I just think like trying to fit the whole like 20 something year relationship into like under 2 hours felt a little like rushed and condensed for me, to where I don't feel like I fully immersed myself in their relationship or their history. So maybe like a little more like backstory or like development of the relationship would have worked more for me. But I thought once they arrived in the city, in America, and like her current husband and all of those conversations, and then of course the end scene, that part of the movie was great. But I just didn't have much of an emotional connection to like take you to that next level.
Yeah. I mean, what a husband. Talk about a husband. Like, if you were if you were in his shoes, would you let, you know, your wife do that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that would be tough. He definitely handled it better than I would have, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely kind of a bit of a red flag. But no, yeah, like for me, it was a gut punch. If you've ever had similar experiences to what happened in past lives, obviously you're going to connect with that movie a little bit more. I gave it a 4.5 out of 5. Nearly perfect movie in my eyes. I do agree with Devin's point, and that we could have used a little more depth, a little more backstory. I think that's what held it back just a little bit. If it was, you know, a little bit longer, I think it would have been much better. Like, I wanted to see a little more from their childhood, a little more from their 20s. I thought everything, from the second half of the movie on was great. I just needed a little more from that first half just to really help me connect even more with the characters. Greta Lee, phenomenal. Could have gotten a nomination, in my opinion. And then, yeah, the ending scene was great. Just the whole time, I felt it in my chest. You know, you're about to shed a tear. You're about to shed a tear. Am I going to shed a tear? And then the ending, you finally shed a tear. And then, yeah, it's a phenomenal movie. The only thing I could say is that we needed just a little bit more, and it would have been perfect for me.
All right, now we got the top two. We got same picks here. So second overall, we have The Holdovers. Shockingly, Alexander Payne movie. I feel like we touched on this one pretty much, but awesome. Three awesome acting performances in this one, and they had to be awesome to carry this movie because that's pretty much all it is. And I thought the writing in this movie was awesome. One of my favorite in recent memories in terms of the writing. So I'm glad to see that. That's probably one of my biggest things I like in movies, is well-written movies. And then Dominic Sosa, best breakout performance of the year. Where's that Academy? Where's that award? I think we should definitely add best breakout performance, best breakout director, or something like, or directorial debut, something like that. You know, get like a Rookie of the Year award in the Academy.
I don't hate that. Yeah, I'd like
to see something like that. That'd be really cool. But or at least give us best supporting actor album. Yeah, it's just something. But yeah, just a heartfelt movie, fantastic relationship scenes. I think the end scene when Giamatti is like leaving and there he's talking to Dominic Sessa's character, that was probably like the biggest gut punch in of the year for me. Something about that relationship and that bond was special, I thought. So I really liked this movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I agree. It kind of gave me Good Will Hunting vibes in a way, and obviously both me and you love that movie. I mean, Giamatti, Sessa, Joy Randolph were phenomenal. I mean, the chemistry between all three of them were great. The story was just heartwarming. I mean, I might just say it. It's the best Christmas movie. Like, is that a hot take? I don't really know. I think it's the best Christmas movie. It's going to be on the watch list every December for me from now on. I just loved it. I feel like if I go back and watch it a second time, I could bump it up to a 5-star movie. It's just, I can't think of much wrong with it. I mean, I can't think of much wrong with it. Like I said, it reminds me of Good Will Hunting. And yeah, best Christmas movie. Elf, get out of the way. National Lampoon's Get Out of the Way. It's Holdovers, baby.
Don't let Chad hear you say that.
Oh, Dad's going to hate that. Dad's going to hate that for sure. But, I mean, it's technically a Christmas movie. Do you think that's a hot take or not? I don't know.
It might not be a hot take. It doesn't, like, just feel like a classic Christmas movie to me, though. So, like, you know, I don't think I'd watch it, like, to get in, like, the holiday spirit or anything. I don't know. It just doesn't have that same type of vibe to me. But, I mean, if you classify it as a Christmas music, it's probably the best one.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm not even, like, I don't. I mostly just say that so I have an excuse to watch it every year because it's just that
there you go.
So, yeah, great, great movie. Definitely second place.
All right, now we got the winner, and it's been sweeping all of the awards from SAG to BAFTA to you name it. It won it. So we got Oppenheimer. So good, you got to go see it twice. I'm going to see it in theaters again before the Oscars. This will be my second viewing. So, awesome, awesome movie. Easy 5-star for me. Second favorite from Nolan. Just, I mean, it's 3 hours. But again, like I said, if it's going to be long, it better be fantastic. And boy, was it ever. So many, I mean, the atomic bomb scene was awesome. You mentioned the scene with the feet and the speech. That was awesome. I mean, I even think some of, like, the interrogate, like, I don't know if interrogation's the right word, but, like, the holding, the hearings, like, when he's having to defend himself not being a communist or whatever, I think some of that's great. And then even, I think, like, even some of, like, the, like, I mean, it wasn't too science, like, technical, and so as far as, like, some of, like, the physics and stuff go, but I thought even that stuff was, like, well done, even, like, his backstory and, like, academia and stuff. I thought, I mean, I just think it was a biopic, and I hard to do it any better.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. Unbelievable movie. You don't really feel the 3-hour runtime just because, like, the whole time something's happening. The dialogue, I mean, I think is some of the best, like, I have ever seen, honestly. I've got it third in my Nolan rankings just behind Dark Knight and Interstellar, but I mean, the more I watch it, it's probably going to go up. I mean, I've seen it 2 times now. I'm going to go see it a third, and I picked up so much more on the second viewing than I did on the first, and it just made it that much better. Like, I moved it up 10 or 15 maybe slots in my movie rankings. No, I mean, Murphy just absolutely destroyed it, and the cast was just phenomenal. The whole time, I was recognizing somebody from something. Kind of strange, too, because it's not often you see the guy who plays Roderick in Diary of a Wimpy Kid in a movie like Oppenheimer, and then all of a sudden, the next scene, you're like, oh, that's Josh from Drake and Josh, and then the next scene, I was like, wait, that's the dude from Sky High. So you get, like random-ass people from, like, Nickelodeon and Disney movies that you would watch when you were a kid, just in this humongous movie, so that was kind of interesting to see as well. No, I mean, the only word I can use to describe this movie is powerful. I mean, the movie bangs, quite literally. It's just, it blows you away in every shape, in every form, just like a bomb. So, yeah. And the score, dude, oh my gosh. Don't even get me started on the score. Unbelievable score. And that's part of what keeps you invested the whole time, is because there's always music bumping in the background, keeping your heart rate up a little bit, and then in those big moments it just gets so powerful. So I mean, best movie of the decade so far for me.
Well, there you go, a little hot take to wrap it up, eh? I think the technical elements are, yeah, I didn't really touch on those as much, but yeah, they're fantastic. They're gonna win a ton of awards. Do you think how many awards do you think it's gonna get? I definitely think it's a lock for like 7. And, you know, I think there's a couple, it might win. So I think it'll be a pretty big night. I think it'll be a pretty big night for Oppenheimer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think, yeah, definitely at least 6 or 7. I mean, yeah, it's just the next, you know, Parasite, Everything Everywhere. Now you got Oppenheimer. It's gonna sweep the Oscars for sure. So, yeah, I think 6 or 7's probably a good number. Could be more, but yeah, I agree.
All right, well, that'll do it for our 2024 Oscars preview. Feel free to reach out to us on Instagram or Twitter, or feel free to send us an email. You can find us on social media at FTSPod, and you can send an email with your Oscars ballot or predictions to theftspod@gmail.com. And while you're at it, go ahead and check out our video format. Josh made a little nice Oscars-themed display for us here. So feel free to hop over on YouTube at From the Sidelines Pod and go ahead and check out the video format if you're not already inclined. Go ahead and drop a sub on that while you're there. So,
all right, yeah, that wraps it up. See you guys. Bye. Have a great time. Watch the Oscars. Let us know what you think.